IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.
Where I talk all things across with some of my favorite people that I look up to, that I enjoy spending time with and talking the game with. Today, I am so excited because I have two of my good lacrosse friends that I have gotten to know well over the past couple of years. We've got Imani West and Layla Kwaku in the house. We all know each other through working together for the U.S. Lacrosse Sankofa clinics that we travel all over the U.S. to do. And today, I'm here talking to them just about their experiences in lacrosse, how they got into the game, and what it's like to be a Black woman in the game, because you've heard my perspective, you've heard Amari's perspective, but I think coming to the tail end of Black History Month and seeing kind of all the things that are going on in the game, there is no better time than this conversation, or for this conversation than now. So Imani, Layla, welcome. Please introduce yourself to the people.
Thank you for having us. I'm super excited. So my name is Layla. I'm originally from Northampton, Massachusetts, which is like the western side, not the side of Boston. Super rural, very liberal. I started playing lacrosse in fourth grade, so that would probably be about 13 years. So lacrosse is not a huge sport in Northampton. It's a very liberal, very welcoming atmosphere, but there's not a lot of racial diversity. There's a lot of diversity in other ways, but not a lot of Black people. So I was pretty much the only Black person in my town who played lacrosse, which is fine. I had a good time. But I actually started playing because I played soccer for a long time. And I was like, oh man, my legs are getting super jacked, but now I want to be a jacked on top. Like, I want to be jacked on top. So I started playing lacrosse, and I ended up loving it. My coach was married to my high school coach. My middle school coach was married to my high school coach. And then their daughter became my best friend, and we went to prom together. And then we eventually were rivals in college. So that was like kind of really nice introduction for me. It was a great introduction, but it was also kind of uncomfortable at some times. So yeah.
I'm excited to dive in. I'm taking little notes, you know, being on professional, I'm taking some notes because we go back. All right, Imani, that's good.
All right, hey y'all. I'm Imani. I'm originally from Maplewood, New Jersey, which is a town in like North Jersey, 20 minutes outside of Manhattan, New York. My town is pretty liberal, definitely like diverse area. I started playing lacrosse in fourth grade because my friends were doing it. And when I picked it up, I kind of did it for fun. And then like eventually I started playing club lacrosse kind of late. And once I did that, I was like, my parents were like, oh, you're going to use this as a way to get to college. And so I started playing goalie in eighth grade. And then I decided to stick with that through high school, and then ended up going to college to play goalie. My teams were usually pretty diverse. My sister also played lacrosse. She's 18 months younger than me. So it was really nice to always have her by my side. And I always had at least a couple of Black players on the teams that I played on, which was really nice. So, that's kind of like my background with lacrosse.
I love it. Don't let them be humble. They're both amazing players, amazing people. I'm excited to dive into that. So, Layla, you mentioned that Northampton wasn't necessarily a hotbed for lacrosse. And I'm curious if you think that, like, kind of coming from an area maybe where lacrosse wasn't the biggest sport, and then going maybe to tournaments or seeing other places in other cities where lacrosse was the hotbed, what was that like? Because it's kind of similar for me. I mean, Maryland, I guess, in some sense, is the hotbed. People might try to fight me. I'm sorry, New York, don't fight me. I feel like seeing lacrosse be even bigger in other areas, like Montgomery County was kind of up and coming, at least in my area, but then going to other counties or going to other states and seeing other people play, it was like, whoa, like lacrosse is the thing. Like even going to Baltimore, I'm like, okay, now I see that lacrosse is like the big thing here.
Yeah. Honestly, I felt kind of out of place when I went to tournaments. I went to a couple in New York I think that was it, actually. I didn't go to a ton of recruiting tournaments. Yeah, there's like some in Massachusetts and some in New York. So I felt kind of out of place because everybody had all this like crazy lacrosse knowledge and they knew all the top players and they had all these lanyards hanging off their backpacks from all the tournaments they went to in California and, you know, down south. And I was like, I have only ever been to two states to play lacrosse. I barely know what I'm doing. I felt like, at least. And they had all the fancy gear and equipment and they just looked more professional than I felt. Even though their playing level wasn't necessarily better, they just exuded more confidence, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I felt like that kind of hindered my recruiting process because I felt like I wasn't good enough. I wasn't as good as these girls who came from, like, I don't know, Westchester or whatever. So I felt like I couldn't talk to these coaches because they wouldn't want me because I'm not confident. I don't look like I command the field like they do. So yeah, I felt like it was a little difficult to fit in and make myself comfortable in that scene.
That's interesting because I guess the original direction, at least what I was thinking, was okay, just on kind of not surface level per se, but you know, how we look, like we, you know, are mm-hmm. black in the sport and we come from these different backgrounds, things like that. But you know, what you mentioned about how players look in their uniform, the lanyards, the confidence that's exuded, like those are things that also play a factor in how you feel about yourself and how you view yourself in your lacrosse background. You know, some of the best players I know, it's kind of on both spectrums. Like they, you know, have the lanyards, the Harrow backpack, the S6 backpack, like all this, the cool lacrosse look, quote unquote, going on that obviously is not the one singular look of lacrosse. But then there's players that, you know, just show up. They got the sweats on, they're chilling, they're doing their thing. So it is interesting that you brought up kind of the difference in availability of resources, of even just the way we dress in the sport. Like those are also things that factor into the differences between players and between access levels.
Absolutely, yeah.
Interesting. And Imani, so you were, you know, in New York, pretty close to Manhattan, in a diverse area as well. And I'm curious, you know, more about your lacrosse experience. Kind of how did you decide, okay, I want to go play the sport in college? And what was it like having multiple diverse people on your team and then maybe going to club programs or club tournaments and seeing that maybe your team had more diverse players or even less diverse players than other teams in your area?
Honestly, I feel like sometimes I had to kind of have like two different personalities when I was around like my different teams, because I played for like a couple different teams. And one of the teams that I played on, I was the only black player. And I was like, I didn't really know anybody. They were all like friends from one high school. So I kind of felt like pretty much alone. Mm-hmm. And then when I was around my teammates from my high school and like my teammates that looked like me, I felt like I could be myself, which is really nice. But having to have like kind of like a double, I guess like a double consciousness a little bit of like just understanding like who you're around. I definitely struggled with that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, my area, like I said before, was pretty diverse, which was a really cool aspect for me growing up. Even like my club coach, like who created our program, he was black, and even my college coach was black, Elaine Jones, which is really awesome. So yeah, it's kind of like a little bit of a different experience, but I definitely struggled with like, also with my role on the field being a goalie, like I didn't really know like who to look up to. Like I didn't find out about any of like the notable lacrosse players until I got way older. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really know like what to watch or like who to even follow at all. Right. So that definitely was a struggle for me. Yeah. While I was playing growing up.
Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting you bring up kind of the like two personality thing, because I remember when I started playing club two in high school and same situation, like didn't really know, you know, they all went to this one particular school. And I was so quiet. And I remember people being like, oh, you're so quiet. And I like, y'all know I'm not quiet. I'm out here rapping all day. But it's just like trying to, you know, that's such an awkward time already. And you're trying to make your way and like figure out, okay, who am I? And then you're in this environment where you don't know anyone. You're so uncomfortable. And you're trying to play lacrosse and show that you're good at it and show that you can play. And so this like dual personality things come into play. And I really hope that there are young people listening to this, because like, I'm sure they're thinking I'm alone in this. And you know, I just have to, I have my school friends, I have my lacrosse friends, and And it's hard. Like, we acknowledge that that is a very difficult situation to be in, because you're just in two different environments, and like, you're trying to kind of work out how to be in both those places, which you do. Eventually we figure it out, and we'll talk about that too. And I'm trying to think, because you just mentioned something else as well. But yeah, I mean, for anyone listening that I guess is kind of at that crossroads where they feel like they have to, or they don't feel comfortable yet on the teams where they're underrepresented, like, what advice do you give to them to just feel more comfortable? And not that the onus is on the player, because obviously coaches and other players have to kind of create that environment too, but, you know, just curious about how you were able to navigate that.
Oh, I don't know. I guess I kind of employed the fake it till you make it strategy. Growing up, I was a very, very shy person in general. So stepping onto these fields with these super white kids, basically, I was extra shy, and there was nothing really that I could talk to them about, because they just came from such a different world than I did. So I really had to fake that confidence. I had to pretend like I was having fun even when I was really uncomfortable. And eventually that confidence did come, but sometimes you do have to kind of take it on the chin, and you have to accept that it's not always going to be comfortable and fun, but you kind of have to make the most of it and just worry about yourself. You don't have to worry about who's the most popular person on your team or whatever, or like what coaches are looking at you. Just play as hard as you can in the moment, and it'll come eventually. You just got to keep your head up. And also, for those people who are not necessarily in the position, but who maybe have a little more cultural capital, maybe look out for those teammates who are a little more shy, who are standing on the edge. Just go up to them and talk to them a little bit. They might be super awkward, but I mean, you might make a great friend in the end. So I feel like that's a super generic answer. People always say that, but it's true. Like, you kind of have to, you have to kind of put yourself out there and like make the effort and talk to people who might not necessarily look like they feel comfortable.
And off that same topic too, so, you know, something that I get asked and that I ideate through a lot is, how can coaches and other teammates foster an environment that's comfortable for diverse players? Because I think that sometimes we see situations where, you know, someone will say, no, like, my team is diverse, and or I, you know, my team has a couple of diverse players or players of color, and I everyone gets along. And we're like, okay, but like, what are you doing to address an issue that comes up? Or, you know, how are you instilling values in your players where they embrace the cultural differences of others? And I'm curious, from, you know, y'all's coaching and also playing, like, what do you see as ways that the higher ups, the people in charge, can actually ensure that that happens within their teams?
Ooh,
I was just going to say, I think it's super important to like acknowledge things that happen. I think that sweeping things under the rug is like super dangerous.
Right.
And it invalidates people's feelings. Mm-hmm. And just because something is, and something that's happening at one school is probably happening at another school on another team, right, somewhere else. So I think it's super important for people to speak up. And also, not saying like, you as a Black player shouldn't feel like you have to speak up every single time. I know sometimes, like, I was kind of a shy player too, so like, I didn't always speak up when things were happening. And just, I feel like Black players shouldn't be forced to speak up. And it should be like a collective thing, and higher up should be speaking out against things that are happening.
Yeah, no, I agree. Because what hurts me, you know, is when I get a DM from a player or a parent, and they're saying, you know, this thing happened, but my child is scared to speak up and doesn't want me to talk,
right,
to the coach because they don't want to get kicked off the team. Or, like,
I don't know what's going to happen, right?
Obviously, I'm not a parent. I'm not in that position. But then I see little Tari, like, feeling those same feelings. And even college Tari feeling those feelings. And having to finally tell, you know, my parents or tell a coach, and be like, yo, like, this is what's happening. This is how I feel. And this is not a comfortable situation for me. Like, what, you know, I'm doing my best, and I need your help. But when you're in that moment, it's so hard to think, like, okay, it's okay for me to ask for help, or okay for me to kind of ask a coach to speak on a topic, because you don't want people to think that you're trying to rock the boat or, you know, you're trying to do something wrong.
I think also, like, going off of before what you said about how players can feel more comfortable on the teams, I think it's super important to find your people. Mm. Like, I remember, like, politics have been super big recently. And when I was in college, like, right around the time when Donald Trump was running for the first time, like, that's when I figured out who on the team, like, understood, like, how we felt about certain things that were happening in the world. And that's, like, kind of when I broke out of my shell and, like, realized, like, oh, these are my people that I can go to and talk to and find comfort in. So I think that's super important. And also they would be super helpful in, like, speaking up in those in those times where you don't feel really comfortable saying something. Right. Kind of like allies to you.
Yeah, definitely.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, Robert. Yeah, you can go.
I think that administration plays a huge, huge role. I have a lot to say about how administration handles this kind of stuff. But a lot of the time I see higher-ups not wanting to make decisions about things, uncomfortable decisions, and that's not, those decisions are not something that a high schooler should be making. Like, if somebody yells a racist slur at you, that should not be a 16-year-old decision to act on that. That is your decision, and you can't make soft choices about it. You have to address it immediately, and you have to make the right decision, whether it's uncomfortable or not, whether you lose funding or not. You have to stand up for these people who don't necessarily have voices or who can't speak up for themselves. That's it for now.
It definitely can have a traumatizing effect. I feel like people say, oh, it's just a word, but it definitely is not. Like, that will stick with you forever.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And something else, Imani, that you had mentioned was that you know, for a good time early in your career, weren't sure, like, what players to look up to, who to follow along with. And it's interesting to hear that, because I feel like now, especially, there's so many different social media accounts and there's games streaming all the time. You can go on YouTube, you can do all this stuff. And some of it, I guess, kind of rings true as well to when we were playing. But when there's only a handful anyway, like, we just wouldn't know. And even now, there's really only a handful, to be frank. Like, that has pushed me to want to put myself out there more, to want to put my profile, put Amari's profile out there more, because of the importance of us seeing people that look like us or people that come from our backgrounds. Like, staying up late to watch Taylor Thornton, staying up late to watch reruns, like, of any Black player that I can find or I could find at the time, I don't ever want that to be the norm in the future. Like, we are working actively so that players of any background, any, you know, ethnic identity, any minority identity can just turn on TV and at least see someone that looks like them playing. Because, right, like you said, having to cherry pick and pinpoint one player to try to watch, like, that's hard.
Mm-hmm. That's something that's always resonated with me, and, like, kind of why I went into teaching in general, was, like, the effect of me coaching girls that looks like me was something that I wanted to do, like, from an educational aspect, like, in a classroom. And, like, I just remember little girls coming up to me, like, oh, my God, like, what's it like to play lacrosse in college? Like, it's so cool that I meet, like, a Black lacrosse player. And, like, girls just starting out. And, like, that is an amazing feeling. And I just hope that the game keeps growing more and more, so we don't have to, like, try to pinpoint certain players. And just, like, you can turn on the TV and just see multiple people on the field who look like you.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. So let's talk a little bit about college. How did y'all find your college homes? Because for me, I guess I haven't really talked about it at length on this podcast. But so for those that don't know, I went to Sewanee University of the South in Sewanee, Tennessee. And I received the Posse Foundation full tuition scholarship to go to Sewanee for academics, and then spoke with the coach and was able to walk on to play there for 2 years of my four that I was at Sewanee. So, you know, it was – the recruiting process is so interesting because I started fairly late. So going to tournaments and, like, understanding, you know, reaching out to coaches, all that stuff, I feel like I did much later, which was completely fine. It's not even late. It's, like, late in, like, I don't know, people committing 7th, 8th grade, 9th grade. But right on time. I'm going to say right on time because I want everyone to know everything happens right on time. But I'm always curious, like, what your recruiting process was like, and then what your overall college, you know, experience was like as well.
So I was kind of like you. I got recruited relatively late. I think it was, like, the end of junior year, beginning of senior year. So I was actually looking at like almost exclusively New York schools. And for those of you who don't know, I went to Mount Holyoke College, which is historically women's university. Well, not university. It's a historically it's a historically women's college in Western Massachusetts, about 20 minutes from where I grew up. And I just got an email from that coach one day, and she invited me to meet the team and visit campus. And I was like, I don't really want to go to an all-girls school. That seems kind of lame. I was one of those girls in high school who was like, oh, all my friends are guys because I don't like the drama of women, you know, that kind of bullshit. So can I say bullshit? Is that allowed?
We'll just edit it out. No, we'll just edit it out.
Okay.
I just want.
So I visited the campus, and it was actually really gorgeous, and everyone was super nice. And the thing that struck me the most was how diverse the team was. I think at the time we had one Black player, one Asian player, and maybe like one or two Hispanics, we definitely got a lot more diverse after that, but still, that for what I was seeing in high school, that was like the most diverse thing I've ever seen in my entire life. So that kind of really drew me to the school. I thought that for the first time I felt like I was at home. Because when I went to visit other campuses, it was almost exclusively white. There was maybe one brown person, one vaguely brown person on the team. And none of the coaches really talked about diversity at all or like what that meant to them. And I just felt so uncomfortable all the time. It was basically a repeat of high school all over again. Like it was the same type of girls, same type of like privileged lacrosse people who have played their whole lives and their parents have played and, you know, that kind of stuff. So I went to Mount Holyoke and I like was finally able to breathe and like relax for once in my lacrosse career. So as like pretty much as soon as I met them, I was like, I'm going to go here.
So I went to Longwood University in Farmville, Virginia. It's funny that you guys say that you guys got recruited late. I didn't sign until April of my senior year, like during spring break is when I went to go visit. And then I remember I was so upset about like all my friends were getting recruited and signing and doing like signing day pictures, and I was like, when is it gonna be my turn? And it was so stressful like trying to get recruited. But yeah, I ended up going to Longwood University in Farmville. And I remember visiting the school, and I really enjoyed how they like they had like a little when they were warming up, that they did like a whole thing with the goalies, which was what I was looking for, like individualized practice for them. And they had mentioned how much the school was like a close-knit community and like really family-like. So that's really what drew me to the school. And also having a coach that looked like me was really awesome. Elaine Jones, she's very like notable in the lacrosse community. So it was really nice having that. Even if none of the players on the team looked like me, I knew that like we could kind of relate on another level. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I ended up choosing Longwood, and it was kind of in the middle of nowhere, which was different from what I was used to, Farmville, which is like an hour outside of Richmond. But I mean, it ended up being okay. I was definitely the kind of person to be homesick freshman year. I remember crying a lot and calling my dad probably every day. But then I eventually like warmed up and got used to it, and definitely loved it. Wouldn't have traded that experience for anything in the world.
That's awesome. I love it. No, I love, and this is why I always ask people to share more about their journeys and their stories, because everything, you know, there's not one singular best way to get recruited or to find your college home. And as y'all can hear, we've all, you know, are more than okay. We're great. And, you know, enjoyed our experiences and have learned a lot through them. And just had to pull up your coach's bio, Imani, because, you know, Black Woman Lacrosse, that's the point. That's the purpose of this episode, so I gotta read directly from her bio. Elaine Jones, the head coach of the Longwood Lancers, was a two-time NCAA Division I All-American at UVA. She led them to four straight national postseason appearances, including a national championship in 1991, and she played 4 years on Team USA. Of the day, shout out to Coach Jones.
Shout out, yes.
And all you fans of you. And, you know, for those that might not have been familiar with her before, like, that's another person that we can look up to and be so inspired by, who's at the helm now for own Division I program. So I'm curious too, like, what was that experience like having a Black female head coach? Because I know, I'm trying to think, like, Gina Oliver, who are some other Black head coaches at the Division I level, Black female?
Who was at Temple? Well, it was a while ago, but Tina.
Tina Sloan Green at Temple.
Yeah. Oh, at George Mason.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember playing against her in college. But honestly, those are the ones that I really only.
Yeah, I have the NCAA's like demographics data. If y'all don't mind, just giving me 1 second. I'm gonna try to, because I actually wrote a piece about this and just how we did not have that many Black coaches across all the levels. But I'm gonna see if I can.
Oh yeah, I remember what you're talking about.
So in 2019, at the Division I level, there was one Black female head coach, and two Black female assistant coaches at the Division I level. There might have been three or four. The spreadsheet is a little bit all over the place, but there were two Black female head coaches at the Division II level. And at the Division III level, there were four Black female head coaches at the Division III level. So those numbers, obviously, we all know can be improved. And I think it's just so important to highlight that there are coaches that look like us that have made it to those ranks, and so many people working in different capacities within teams to also reach those ranks. But yeah, so what was that like for you playing for a Black head coach at the Division I level in a sport that has traditionally not had many coaches, a number of coaches reach that height?
It was honestly really, really awesome. I felt like we could relate on different things that I wouldn't be able to relate to on other coaches with other coaches. Mm-hmm. And it just gave me like a different sense of comfort. And I felt comfortable going to her with any issues that I had, which was really nice. And I feel like I can still go to her now if I have anything. And we've kept in contact even after I graduated. And I think she won Coach of the Year for the Big South, I think last season or two seasons ago, possibly. And I went down and got to see her, which was really nice. But she did amazing things for me in my career. And I really am appreciative of having her as my coach in college. It was really an awesome experience.
Love that. I love that. Please send this to her so she knows we're giving her.
I will.
Jones, this is
for you. Flowers.
And in college, you know, for both of you, so I kind of think of my college experience. So Sewanee is on a beautiful mountain, just lots of leaves and trees and beautiful, and lots of hiking and pollen and all the things. Being the only Black woman on the lacrosse team, you know, that in itself, and then having a very diverse friend group off the field, where like my best friends were Hispanic and white and Asian, and my friends, like, we just, we're from all over, we're very diverse. When you mentioned navigating kind of two different groups, that to me is the immediate example I think of like with my friend group. I felt super comfortable, like knew everyone, we're all vibing, all get along, everything's great. And then on the team, even though, you know, everyone's great, we're all vibing, it still felt so different and so hard to connect because there wasn't that element of diversity that I was used to on the team. And like, I remember driving 8 hours away to Kentucky somewhere to go play, and all my friends are at the barbecue that the Black fraternity is hosting, and like, campus is basically going to the barbecue because, you know, it's free food on a Saturday, and I'm on a bus 8 hours away with like none of my friends. I'm not in the sororities represented in the group. And even now I still try to kind of rationalize and understand like why that was so tough and why it was bothersome. And I realize it's because it was just hard to connect. Like, it's hard to connect when you don't necessarily have much in common. And then it can be hard if you're trying to like make that connection, but it's, you know, it's not really happening because off the field, you don't really spend time with the groups. Like, do y'all get what I'm trying to say? Like, it's just kind of navigating your social life and your team life and trying to make the two converge is so hard when your time is spent in so many different ways.
Yeah. For me, it was a little bit different. Just because I didn't have a separate group of diverse friends, lacrosse pretty much were like my main source of friends. Mm-hmm. So lacrosse basically was my entire personality. It was my identity. Well, sports in general, but mainly lacrosse was my identity. So especially when I stopped playing lacrosse, that was like a huge loss for me. And I kind of had to figure out like who I was after that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I didn't have a huge separation between friends and lacrosse. I was lucky that I was able to keep that kind of friend group from middle school to high school and then some through college. But yeah, I guess I was lucky that I didn't have to separate myself. But outside of my high school career, like in tournaments and stuff, that was a whole nother box of another box of chocolate?
Can of worms.
Yeah, mine's kind of similar to Layla's. Like, I didn't really, lacrosse literally was my life too. Like, I lived with all my teammates. And I guess weird truth that I can share with everybody that I've never really shared. I was like kind of afraid to like not like find friends that looks like me in college. I don't know why. Like, I didn't know if I wanted, like, didn't want to hurt people's feelings. But like, I was like, I remember scared to go to like BSU meetings and like, I don't know, because I moved from New Jersey to Virginia, which was like 8 hours away. I had no idea who anybody was. Like, I was forced to be around like my teammates and stuff. And I love them, like, still to this day, they're amazing people. But yeah, I kind of just like, I didn't really have a separation either. So I kind of had to like find my own comfort within, and it took some time. But once I did find my people, like I was able to like warm up and kind of break down my walls a little bit and be okay with being myself.
Yeah. I love that. This exchange, I think, just showed, for as much as, and again, why I love talking to people, but you know, for as much as we have experienced some hardships within the sport, the Black experience is not uniform. There's not one singular experience. And I love that y'all were so connected and so close to your teammates. Like, I think that is such a cool thing, because that, like, that's your family, those are your homies, you get to hang out. And as much as I love, you know, my different group of friends that all had different interests, and I got to explain lacrosse to them, and they probably looked at me like, I don't know what it is. But even now with the ESPN show launching, one of my best friends, Miranda, shout out to Miranda, she's like, I know nothing about lacrosse, but I'm a watch because I support you. Like, you know, and I think that's great that there's so many different ways to connect to people on college campuses, whether it be on your team and off the team. And we can, I don't know, we can all just talk about kind of the different experiences we've had. And it's interesting to hear too about kind of having, maybe fear isn't the right word, but like reservations about stepping away from the comfort zone of your teammates. Because I was scared to step away from the comfort zone sometimes of my friends. Mm-hmm. Of like, okay, I could go to that party with my teammates, but like, I know if I go to this other party, I'm gonna be really comfortable and have fun, and it's gonna be really chill. Because I love pulling up to BSU after practice or whatever. I love going to Ola. I was in Ola all the time. Listen, Ola, you know, I was there for food. Where's the comida? Let's eat. But I think that's something that's true too. Like, it can be really hard to just step out of your own comfort zone and like push yourself to go try to make those connections. Mm-hmm. I love my friends. I'm not trying to be uncomfortable. So I was not trying to be uncomfortable. I'm not trying to be uncomfortable. So let's kind of fast forward a little bit. Actually, maybe before we do, I mean, are there any experiences in college that stand out for y'all, whether it was an incident within lacrosse or even high school too, because I don't think we asked this question, but an incident within lacrosse that you experienced that was racially charged and how that played out, or an incident where something played out but you had a positive outcome from an ally or some other person that helped you kind of overcome that situation?
Yeah, I have two, actually. So one was my junior year, I believe. We were playing at Gordon College. And I think the boys had finished practicing right before our game, so they were still hanging out. So we started our game, everything was fine, and then they suddenly started chanting stuff at us and, like, yelling at specific players and calling very specifically the most Hispanic players out. They looked at our roster and chose to gloss over the other ethnic people of our team, and they just chose to pick on two. One was named, her last name was Rodriguez, and the other one was Torres Minor, so very obviously Hispanic. So they started yelling stuff like, go back over the wall and, like, go back to where you came from, just really stupid stuff like that. And so we, during halftime, we, like, let our coach know, hey, this is happening. And I think our coach went over to their AD or something, and the AD had a light chat with them, but they didn't really look like they were having a serious conversation about it. It was just kind of like a, hey, you know, these people are feeling uncomfortable. Can we just keep it down a little bit? You don't have to stop saying racist stuff, but you just got to tone it down a bit. That's kind of the vibe that I got from that AD. And we never really got an apology or anything from that, but that was just a really horrible moment for my teammates. And I hope that it never happens to anybody, because it was so uncomfortable and very difficult to play through when people are yelling really racist things at you. So my question for listeners is, what does genuine allyship and supportive administration look like? Because they love to put our faces on Instagram during Black History Month, and they love to say our names on the Black of warm-up jerseys, but then they refuse to do anything of real power for us in the end. So, like, all of it feels so fetishizing, and I don't want to be part of that. So what does genuine, authentic allyship look like? I don't even know, because there hasn't been, like, a good example of it.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And the fetishization topic, or the mention of that, I, you know, when we paused, I was sharing how I have a hard time with that, because I don't know, what's a nice way of saying this? Like, if the only time we see your Black lacrosse players is during Black History Month, that's a problem.
Yep.
Big because problem. They're telling me that you pulled a young person out of their personal time, they're doing their business outside of business hours, to come into your studio and sit on a bench and talk about being Black. Have you asked them how they feel being Black on your team and in life before Black History Month? If you have not, that's where we're going to start. We're going to start by engaging with your Black athletes outside of this month, outside of when an incident happens and you need to show that you have Black people on your team. Because I bet you that does not feel good for them, no matter how much they smile and say, sure, coach, for the team, I'll do it. So I think it starts having genuine conversation with your players and checking in and showing them that you care about them as individuals. And I mean, that should go across the board for everyone, but especially your Black players, when incidents happen, when things are happening, like, checking in on your players, checking in on your people. My best managers at work do that. They check in regardless of what's going on, but especially, like, when riots were going down in Atlanta, managers I'd had projects back were checking in on me, saying, I know that this happened, I'm so sorry, what can I do? So I think allyship starts with deep conversations behind the scenes where people aren't even watching.
Right, so true. Yeah, I think you're totally right. It's about what you do when the media is not watching, and when there's not a threat of defunding your athletic program, that's when we see what the true character is.
Yeah, I think we learned from this summer that performative activism is no. Like, we're not trying to write, like, Black Lives Matter everywhere. Like, we need actual action. So I think uplifting Black players throughout, like, a whole year is necessary, as opposed to just doing it during Black History Month. Like, we all know it's Black History Month, but, like, this shouldn't just happen in February, also the shortest month of the year. This should not just happen in February. This needs to happen all year round.
Right.
Black history isn't just reserved to this one month. Mm-hmm. It needs to be, like, a constant thing that's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And again, there are so many people doing great effort and great work, and I appreciate that we're having these conversations, but I know people will listen with the thought in mind of, how do I, as a coach or as a ref or an admin, do better? And these are the ways that we ask you to do better. It's just connect with your athletes. connect with them, just mm-hmm. checking on them. It's a hard world out
they're
here.
They're not just, right, they're not just Black athletes. They're people first. They're individuals first. Then yeah. they're, it depends on how they identify. They could be Black second, and then they, or they could be athlete second, but you have to know what that is first before you interact with them in an appropriate way. So you have to ask them, maybe not directly, do you identify as Black or an athlete first? But you, like, through conversations, you need to get to know them in that way.
Yeah, I think also going off of that, you should make them feel like a space where they feel welcome to share. Like asking them is great, but like if they don't feel comfortable sharing, like why should they open up to you if they don't feel comfortable sharing? Like you need to right. you need to make sure that they know that they're welcome and their thoughts or their feelings are valid and that you're actually going to listen to what they're saying as opposed yeah. to just like speaking and saying what you want to say.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You're so right. Yeah.
I agree. Because then if you're saying, oh, well, so-and-so left the team, but I don't know, you know, why they left. They probably left because it wasn't a welcoming place.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't welcoming. If you're letting jokes fly, yeah. welcome that shouldn't, on the bus that shouldn't, if you're not acknowledging that, you know, this so-and-so week has been tough because of this racially motivated incident that's happening in the world. Like, you cannot expect people to perform normally, especially right now, because it's a whole panoramic, but you cannot expect people to perform normally when their communities are under attack. And I think that happens a lot, and I'm glad that we're talking about that, because like why are we expected to perform normally when on TV a city's burning?
Right.
Why do I have to perform mm-hmm. normally if like 10 minutes away from me madness is going down? So these are things that I want everyone to be aware of as well. So
I'm sorry, Tari. I didn't mean to laugh, but did you say panoramic?
I may have said Panasonic. Lost on me.
There's all the words. Anything that starts with a P. Panera Bread, Panasonic,
Pomegranate,
Pandemonium, Parallelogram.
I was just shocked that you said that in like a professional. I was like, oh.
You still got one.
I bet you people will not they will not catch that either. It's a little gem for y'all. For y'all Twitter Black folks out there.
Black Twitter. We're a little cross Twitter converging.
Yeah.
But I'm proud to see more and more Black players. I'm proud to see you know, people standing up. I'm proud to see people using their platforms, and I'm most proud of us being Sankofa clinicians.
Yes!
I love that, honestly.
Okay, who wants to give a rundown? Who wants to tell them what Sankofa is, what we do, how much fun we have, and why it's important?
I feel like you got it.
I gotta do it.
You got the bio.
Drink some water. Presentation. Okay. And after the wrong thing, Ebony, please don't fire me.
I also feel like I should give a shout out to my sister because she played at Delaware State, which is one of the only two HBCUs that has Division I women's lacrosse. Yes. So shout out to Delaware State and Howard.
We love it. We love that.
We love to see it.
So the U.S. Lacrosse Sankofa Clinic Series was founded by a great, great group of Black lacrosse players, including Chaz Woodson, who actively also coaches and teaches a bunch of really great seminars with Sankofa and with U.S. Lacrosse. But the aim is to bring lacrosse to areas with underrepresented minorities within the game, so areas where maybe lacrosse wouldn't be or lacrosse is just growing, to just make sure everyone has access. Everyone can try the game, fall in love, and be the next great generation of lacrosse players. I personally have been to, I've been to Detroit, I've been to Oakland, I've been to New Orleans.
South Carolina?
Did I go there? I probably did. I know I went to Columbia. I remember it was snowing. We're in New York and they all had helmets and I was like, what's going on? But different places to coach, and it's the highlight of my week, of my month every time we have a clinic. Sadly, right now on pause, obviously due to COVID, but it's just such a fun opportunity to give back, and that's how we all met.
Yeah. I'm so happy to have met you guys. Honestly, like, Sankofa is the light of my life. makes me so happy every time we get emails or like updates about anything, and going on our trips together and meeting all these great people. It's just like such a wholesome, tight-knit community that I never, ever, ever imagined that I would be part of. And I'm just, oh, so happy to be here.
It is truly like eye-opening, honestly. Like I've like, we actually exist like all around the States. It's insane. Like how everybody's background is so different and diverse. Definitely a space that I appreciate being brought into. Shout out to Ebony for inviting us, but yeah, it's awesome. I love it there. And it's also really cool seeing like these places that don't really have lacrosse, the kids will pick up a stick and play other sports and like pick it up like literally at the snap of your fingers. Like they play soccer, play basketball, and they're still able to like transfer those skills from other sports over into lacrosse and be successful like with barely any practice, which is really amazing to see. And just to watch kids like catch their first ball is it's awesome.
Yeah, and I think one of my favorite things about the clinics, and you know, just one, like you said, the diversity of our group already, like we just have people from all different backgrounds and played at all different levels, and just so stoked to be there to coach. But the kids like know, at least in some of the clinics I've been, you know, they're different ages. We have like 6 to like 13 probably, and particularly the smaller kids have never played lacrosse before. The sticks are like pink or they're blue or they're whatever color, and they're just pretty and they're excited and they get to run around, and it's such a pure connection to the game. And that's what I want for our young people. Like, I don't want it to be, oh, Black people don't play lacrosse, but we're going to get you into lacrosse because Black people don't play. And like, your introduction to lacrosse is going to be you being the only person from your background, and you're going to be singled out every time. It's like, I want lacrosse to feel how I felt when I was introduced to it, being on a diverse high school team of, this is just a game, a sport that we play, and it's so fun, and pick up the stick and run with it. Take it however, whatever direction in your life you want with it. And I think that pure connection to lacrosse sometimes gets lost a lot of time when incidents happen, or when we go to college and we're stressed about playing well, or when, you know, we're working and we're trying to coach and all these things. It's just like the reminder of the purity of falling in love with lacrosse is what keeps me coming back to coaching and to playing, just because it's so lovely.
That's the beauty of lacrosse. Like there's such a diversity of experiences. Yeah. But we all at the same time have the same exact experiences. Like if I were to say the bus ride home after a night game, you all know what I'm talking about. Absolutely. Like that is a very specific experience.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. I love that. That's a happy note. You know what? That's a happy note. And that's all my little topics that I had organized, guys, on my iPad.
Perfect.
No, I think that's the perfect note to, you know, I don't want to say end this conversation because it's so ongoing, but at least end the portion of this conversation, because in all the things that happen and in all the ways we look back on the game, I always want to circle back to the happy parts and circle back to how much we've accomplished and how much we continue to accomplish through lacrosse and the connections that we made, because I know that in like 20 years, we're all still going to know each other and still be friends and still talk about lacrosse and be like, you know, did y'all see the XYZ game? Are you going to lacrosse convention? Because it's in so-and-so city. Like, let's link up, you know? So I think that's something I always want to remember too, is that, yeah, the community part is the best. And I hope everyone listening today has picked up some gems from our conversation and, you know, understands even more about the experiences that minority players get within the game, but also the ways that there are people out there continuously making waves and wanting to diversify the game itself at the grassroots level. So Imani, Layla, thank you for your time today. It has been a blast and I can't wait to share this.
Oh, pleasure. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having us.
IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.